speak of very influential pioneering record labels, we said Bedrock, but we've got to talk about Huge. Huge Tunes is a classic label. It's spelled H-O-O-J, based out of Europe, and they're not around anymore, sadly. They don't have the same output they were up to, but so many phenomenal productions. What we're hearing right now is the deeper shades of Huge. Volume 2 was mixed by Lee Burridge, and it's a nice bedding for the interview I'm about to play for you guys. Now, I've got to put out a little disclaimer. At 5 a.m., you know, with a little bit of social lubricant in me, too much dancing, and just overall excitement, my social interviewing skills get a little bit just overjoyed. Lee Burridge overjoys me. I'll start this playback. Tonight I'm going to play the first 15 minutes of an extended 30-minute interview we did. And he's such a character, such a sonic wildebeest, but ultimately pretty patient with my 5 a.m. interviewer style. See if he makes you laugh like he made me, and get a little insight to a 40-year-old wizard of electronic music.
Such as Global Underground, phenomenal craft work on Balance albums, and started up with Craig Richards, The Tyrant. Lee, can you tell us a little bit about what brought you here over the past few decades? How did you rise to the place you are now?
First of all, I didn't have a girlfriend originally. I decided by being a DJ it might help. I was living in the countryside, and now my father owned a bar, and at that point, there weren't a lot of people around, and he wanted some cheap labor, so asked if I wanted to be a DJ in the bar, and you know, I turned him down, I was a little shy, and then one day I woke up and thought, you know what, it would be fun, and it didn't happen in the in-between bit, but 25 years later, here we are in LA, and it's all been sort of a fun night. No, I initially started out playing music that you would hear on the radio. I mean, there was no real dance music scene around then. There was, obviously, there's been dance music for a long time, but I was playing Depeche Mode, which was probably the coolest thing, but then I was playing the Pet Shop Boys also, you know, and I was playing waltzes and 60s rock and roll, The Twist, whatever, you know, at somebody's birthday, and it's just been a very slow progression. I discovered sort of Acid House in 87 through somebody that said I should come to a party. I was inquisitive. I went to the party, thought it was the most amazing thing I'd heard. I had no idea what was going on. And it's been something that I've demanded in a nightclub. The DJs I've always liked in my life are the ones that you're not really sure that what they're going to play next. So with dance music, you never know what people are going to play next because, you know, a lot of the time you've not heard any of this music.
Just the overwhelming stimulation of not novelty or trend, but a sense of, like, what, like bamboozling audio quality.
I mean, 1987 was, this was something a lot of people had never heard before. You know, music had shifted left of where it was, or right, or wherever, you know, and new sounds were being made with synthesizers, and new ideas were being put forward by people in Detroit, or, you know, Kevin Saunderson, Derek May, all these people, and then, of course, Ibiza had the Mediterranean DJs mixing together a very eclectic collection of records.
Would you say you felt that Balearic influence, that cultural diffusion coming, and that was that hitting locally, or did you travel to find that?
I think everybody did. I actually traveled. I mean, it wasn't happening in our village.
So the young man left the village. I hear you traveled afar. Where did you find yourself after this vinyl addiction bit?
I actually got offered a job in 91. I tried to make it in the UK playing house music, and I knew nobody. I didn't live in a city. I wasn't working in a record shop, and this meant that it didn't matter how many cassettes I gave out, because it was cassettes back then, which is kind of endearing. you know, people were booking their friends, and nobody could really mix at that point either. You know, people were cobbling together different records, different speeds, different ideas, and so mixing wasn't really that big a deal back then. Anyway, I was obviously continuing to be a normal club DJ playing the pop music, and somebody saw me doing that and offered me a job in Hong Kong, which, of course, being, you know, so well, very knowledgeable about everything, you know, I'm like, oh, yeah, I've never been to Japan. which is funny, because actually journalists drop that one on me occasionally. They're like, yeah, you spend all this time in Hong Kong, in Japan, and I'm
check that globe.
Yeah, Hong Kong is actually part of China. But so I just thought I was 22, and I thought I'd try out Hong Kong and see what was going on in Hong Kong, which actually the answer was nothing. Aside from...
Until you got there.
Yeah, exactly. But that's literally how it was. There was a Chinese guy that was trying to play house music and giving away free haircuts at his parties, which is sweet. And then there was the bars that I was working in, and then there were people that had maybe been around Europe or America or Australia, and they'd attended raves, as they were called back then. So they had an understanding of what dance music was, and there was no outlet, so I decided to be that outlet, and we initially started Sunday night, midnight, and the first party, the first Hong Kong rave party, 10 in the morning when we let them out, because we locked everybody in. People are like late for work, you know, and asking when
lives are changed.
Yeah, when's the next one? Lives were changed, actually, because ecstasy was not illegal. It wasn't really legal, but it was a poison, not a drug, for cocaine. So there was this stimulating drug influence in Hong Kong. People had disposable money, and now we had
this exploration into, you know, yeah, psychonautics.
There were a lot of people traveling through Hong Kong that I think maybe it was the first place that they felt they were free. They were away from their parents, or Hong Kong was really very hedonistic, and I think I nearly killed myself.
So glad you didn't. There's two gentlemen that strolled through Hong Kong and became enamored, and then they, would you say they lifted you? I speak of Sasha, and I hear that, like, it was from Hong Kong that you found yourself with a new channel back into Europe, or a rise into exposure.
It really was time for me to leave. I loved Hong Kong, but I'd done it, and I could definitely have stayed, and just really continued to do what I did, which was very satisfying, but I needed to challenge myself, and I think I used the handover of ownership, I guess, of Hong Kong when it became Chinese again in 97 as a point that I would aim for to leave. I actually left about 6 months before that happened. The two DJs, Craig Richards and Sasha, were a lot actually of DJs that paid me a lot of attention, paid me a lot of compliments, promised me the world, all these promoters, and actually Craig and Sasha were the only ones that really followed through on the promises. You know, people say a lot of
shit.
Yeah, a lot of shit when they're high in a nightclub. And so I came back to the UK, called all these people, and of course nobody even returned my calls. But Craig and Sasha, we sat down, we had meetings. I initially started playing at Craig's other night that he was running at the time. And then we formed Tyrant, which was actually, I think, the most important part of my life in the late 90s, because it really, it sort of focused the spotlight on me. And
forced you into that creativity, that new level.
Yeah, I just think people came along and they were like, who are these guys playing with Sasha? You know, Sasha's been a massive name for years. And we were the two guys that were regularly playing with him, because, you know, in the past he would maybe play with somebody a couple of times, but not so much. And, you know, then suddenly we had the residency in two different places with, you know, people who are, or a DJ who people are regarding as God. You know, that whole Sasha's God thing. And so I guess we were the Archangel Gabriel, and maybe, I think I'm the devil more like. But,
all right. Yeah. The stature, the prominence of the clubs you held residency at is no joke. Fabric was one of them, clearly the higher of the dance music scene in Europe. But I also know that you have this liberated sense of travel. I know that you've done the full moon parties in Thailand. You've done some of those those, you know, downright fiesta.
Like. Believe it or not, with the full moon parties, when I went to Hatterene in Thailand the first time, which is where, you know, still to this day it happens every single month, hippies were playing drums around a fire. That was full moon party. And my friend and I turned up and we saw the potential and went back to Hong Kong, got Dentist Records, and came along with another guy called Backyard Dave and started really the early parties on the beach. So I'm to blame for anybody who goes out there nowadays. I actually don't go anymore. I'm really thinking about it again, but I'm to blame. If there are any parents listening, I'm sorry. You know, I've really corrupted your kids by putting ice inside them.
There's just a sense of unadulterated celebration through your sound, whether it's a celebration of the sedentary, of the like inward focus I found through your Resident Advisor podcast. That was like that was a gift. And then like whether it's a club set, feels like a goddamn tribal council. Like there's a sunning. I think that's what I truly appreciate in what you offer. Let's get a little wild. What would you recommend on the checklist of life for the adults who are missing something or the young adults that need direction? You've had a lot of opportunities, a lot of choices. Would you look at it? Write this down.
Do something that fulfills you. Don't do something for money. This has been an amazing thing I've fallen into. I mean, I wasn't born and decided age 8 that I wanted to be a DJ. I just, it found me or I found it. You know, I was always appreciative and somehow managed to organize my life, so my life is music, you know. And if you are creative in any way, pursue it, at least, you know. I mean, if maybe you can't get paid to do it, just pursue it because it fulfills you, it makes you happy, and
outlet of expression.
Yeah, I think happiness and doing a job are really the top of mind sort of list of things that I would recommend other people to do. You know, like money is fantastic, it buys you stuff, but it's just stuff.
Distraction from the goal.
No, it's pretty obvious. I mean, everybody wants stuff. I love stuff. You know, you want whatever. You want an iPhone or a yacht or to go into space. You know, they all cost money.
But if you don't care music, who will?
I actually don't care if I ever go into space. I'd love to, you know, but... And I don't actually care if I have an iPhone. I have another phone and it works fine.
Point
you
is,
know, waking up in the morning and feeling happy with your life makes your life so much easier.
Music is your life. Do you have any instruments?
I used to play guitar, and I wanted to play keyboard, but my mum took me in. It's funny, I look back now, I think the guy was sort of shit, because he told me that the span of my hand wasn't wide enough to be able to play. I don't know how old I was when my parents took me to learn keyboard, and I'm so upset that it never happened, because it would come in very useful. I could stand up playing records and with a keyboard, you know, punching a few chords in. Enhancing the experience. No, and I'm pretty sort of demon on, you know, things like tambourine and triangle.
Let's get a little quirky. Would you say you have a favorite elevation for your shindigs? If you had a pool party, do you want to be at the sea level with an infinity pool, or are you going to be 13 stories up on the standard rooftop?
I'd like to do the pool party in zero G.
There we go.
I mean, how amazing would that be? Not only would you be, like, you know, floating around, so would the water.
I like creative responses.
It's funny you should say that. I mean, actually, it wasn't an elevation. It was more of a sort of situation. I just came back from Montreal about 3 weeks ago. Montreal people are crazy. I went to the Igloo Fest. Now, bear in mind, it's minus 30 degrees centigrade. And they're outside, 2,000 of them, jumping around. And I'm really unprepared. You know, I've sort of turned up with 3 pairs of socks. And, you know, like some light jacket and a pair of jeans. So, unfortunately,
how am I going to cue a final?
Yeah, no, my fingers. I was so cold until I drank a bottle of Jameson's. You know, I was fine, but I wasn't drunk. I can't believe it. I've DJed in some pretty cool places. I DJed on Whistler in Canada, where it's a snowboarding resort. Playing music to no one because people are just zooming past, but it's playing across the mountain, which is really, because it sounds great outdoors. I always thought that in Thailand, you know, you have this different space, sound works differently, and in it's
the texture you paint.
Yeah, so it just floats away into the distance, you know, it's not bouncing off a wall at all, so nice to be down on top of a mountain again, I suppose.
I want to be there on that mountain. Now, you've got Burning Man ahead of you. Do you play at Burning Man, or do you find yourself like a psychonaut adventurer?
The first year I went to Burning Man, I decided I didn't want to play because I wanted to understand what Burning Man was and become part of Burning Man for something that attends more than turning up. I'm a DJ, here's my thing, you know, I've DJed every year since in a few different places. And it's fantastic because people don't know really that you're playing. It's not that good, you know, it's not quiet, it's not.
It's a transient embrace.
It's really about the music and not about lyrics, which I love, you know. I've seen, you know, you hear from word of mouth people playing where maybe, but you know, maybe that isn't really playing somewhere. Cup Box played last year and people were talking about when, you know, where it's gonna be. I think because it's so big, it was the main set Saturday night when they're going to the band, but I tend to find found a couple of people that just wanna hear or play good music, and you know, we hang out with them and just spend time with them. It's cool. And actually last year I played while Carl Cox was playing. So I think we only had like 200 people, but it was the best part.
Yeah.
It was amazing, you know, 200 people that were just
something so special
into the music. Yeah, totally. And
something special.
My ego doesn't need 5,000 people to make me feel good. You know, I'd actually would have played if one person was there and he had a good time. You know, it's the same response. You hopefully get somebody that's having a good time. Actually, you know what? I probably play on my own. I'd have a really good time on my own.
That's what I love to hear.
Yeah, music loud is, you know, it's a great thing. I'm just selfish. I just want to hear my music all the time. Sorry, everybody.
So that was Lee Burridge and an interview UCLARadio.com did with him 3 weeks ago when he was at Avalon. An amazing night. He played with BT, and I think Lee took the cake. Now, next week, tune in Friday, same time, 8 to 10. I'm going to play the second part of that interview for you. And what we were hearing in the background through that was Deeper Shades of Huge. Huge as in huge tunes, of course. Volume 2 is mixed by Lee Burridge himself, and I love that remix of was it Energize? Energy 2000. That was so good. Anyways, I'm going to step behind the decks. I got 3 tracks to show you. Very special. It's this week's secret sauce. And then we got Ben Liu live in the studio with the DJ set coming right up. This one goes out to all the people who joined me for the Freaky Sunday. Damien Lazarus, head of Crosstown Rebels, came out. The Freaks came out, and man, was it good. Matias Aguayo from Chile was there, and special guest Steve Schwartz. I want to show you his brand new track. This one came out the 2nd of February. It's called These Moments. Let's bring this moment to life. I don't wanna sleep, I want my eyes to creep. I don't wanna let you go. I don't wanna leave, don't wanna make believe you and I will never grow. Let's bring this moment to life. Let's bring this moment to life. Thank you.
Friday night, 8 to 10 p.m. Pacific Standard Time.
Thank you all again for tuning in to Electronic Frequencies. My name is DJ Synergy. Last three tracks we heard, I opened it up with a track called Moment. It's a new one by Damian Lazarus, and it's put out on Get Physical Music. Then it switched into I Don't Need Competition by Gano. You can find that on the Beyond record label. And then the third track, just such serenity. It's Nude by Tom York, remixed by Ripperton. And now we got to bring you into Ben Liu's special guest DJ set live for UCLAradio.com.
Would you wait for me? Save a place for me. How deep is your faith in love? Would you lie for me? Hold the line for me. How deep is your faith in love? Would you wait for me? Would you wait for me? Would you wait for me? Would you lie for me? Would you lie for me?
Would you lie for me?
How deep is your faith in love? How deep is your faith in love? How deep is your faith in love?